My name is Troy. This is See You Next Tuesday, and I'm here with a guest today. Grew up with him. We never really hung out that much, but he was always, did you grow up on Evan Bear Street?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the first time I ever met you.
But it's wild, man. Out of 700 plus, well, by the time we got to graduation day, there were a lot less than started with.
Yeah.
But, man.
But I'm sorry, I didn't even say your name. You're Brian Fitzgerald.
Bingo.
You're a musician full time.
Yes, sir.
Which is cool. And like I said, we went to Coatesville, which is a dying steel city, basically.
Yeah, what hasn't burned down yet is
is infested with crack and.
Yeah, it's like.
It's not quite that bad, but it's
macro Ohio.
Yeah, exactly.
Micro Ohio.
And it's not really getting better, but you got to come from somewhere.
It's the truth, man. You got to know your roots. And I think we got the best world, like real world education at anybody.
Oh yeah. And that's true. Cause I moved to Florida and for a year after high school in West Palm Beach. And like, there's a lot of, I don't know, it's coming from where I'm from. I'm used to being around all kinds of different people, racially, and then you get to Florida and there's like Haitians and Cubans and white people and black people and Spanish, and a lot of them don't like each other, and like, I don't know, it just kind of surprised me because it's different from up here.
Yeah, everybody, it's for you know, as much I guess hostility as there was, it still was like everybody got along.
I can't name one time where I was like, damn, that's like fucked up in terms of something racial.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Getting deep right off the bat. Wow.
But
no one was expecting this.
Yeah. This is the hard hitting shit. But you are, like I said, a musician, a multi-instrumentalist.
Yes, sir.
Let's get into a little bit of that.
Yeah.
At what age did you discover music? Was it your parents?
Yeah, big time. I was like 2.
Yeah.
The first, you know, a lot of the first memories I have are listening to music. And I mean, by the time I was 2, I had my first Sony.
Mm-hmm.
My parents made me cassettes. Well, I don't know if they made me them, but I took the cassettes of Steely Dan and like Magical Mystery Tour. I had like a lot of early Genesis, like Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, man. I love Peter Gabriel.
Some of the early stuff with Collins up front too. Like, I mean, Land of Confusion when I was like 2.5, I would walk around singing it.
Yeah, I love that song. I'm so pissed that
Earth Wind Fire destroyed
that song.
Yeah, yeah.
It ruined it for me.
His voice actually surprisingly did work for it, I think, but...
That's true, I just don't like them. Turns you off. It turned me out, not you.
Yeah.
It turned me off too.
but yeah, it could have gone a better direction, I think. But I started listening to that, and Jean-Luc Ponty actually... pretty heavily, who is like one of the biggest pioneers of electric violin, which is, you know, my main thing.
We're getting to that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Segway.
And was that your first instrument?
Yeah. Started playing when I was 9. And then, that year, John Blake, who's a Philly electric violinist, jazz violinist. I'd put him as, you know, one of the top 5 guys in the entire world that has like popularized the instrument.
Right.
Short of, you know, Grappelli and Jean-Luc Ponty. So he came to the school and he actually performed with his quartet. And it blew me away. And I actually learned a couple of his tunes by ear. I'd only been playing for about 4 or 5 months, but the way my head worked, it's one of those things that, you know, once you realize that it's on, you never turn it off.
Right.
And so I learned some of his stuff. And the music teacher, who was actually really hip... She knew that he was coming back. I don't know how they got this cat for 2 years in a row, but so he came back that year and she talked to him before they went on, said, I got this little guy that, learned some of your tunes. You know, at least knows the heads and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, can he come up and maybe sit in with you? So he's like, absolutely. So I get up there and I play with him, and that was, you know, short of like one classical performance, you know, and, you know, at 9 years old, you know, with an ensemble that age, it's not that pleasing, but
yeah.
I got up there and I got to play with this cat, and I was just like, from the whole school, everybody's going nuts. I'm like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah. So that's that feeling. Yeah.
So I've known for a long time.
Yeah. And it was probably good for getting comfortable on stage too, starting.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, I can remember before that, I think, and it helped me as a vocalist, I would do impersonations and I would walk around beatboxing. I didn't know what beatboxing was. I never heard beatboxing, sure. But I walk around the house going,
boom, boom, me too. Boom, I was always making some kind of noise.
Yeah. Yeah. Drumming on the desks and everything. Yeah. So, I mean, I think making music from the time I was, you know, able to be aware that I was, you know, existing, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yep. It's weird that we never collaborated on shit.
It is weird. We played shows in different bands, mm-hmm. But weird, man.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is. So, and here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. So, violin, your main instrument. And then, are you self taught on guitar and drums? Or?
Yeah, guitar, drums. I started playing a different instrument every year. So, sax came the following year. They actually bullshitted me. The whole thing with violin was weird is that I was in our school system, you picked three instruments and they would, I guess give you the one that they thought was most applicable, which is kind of weird and, objective.
That was always drums all the way.
Yeah. And I wanted to play. I had drums. I think they told me right off the bat. They were like, there's too many percussionists already. Yeah. So, I think they started at Z and worked backwards. So I was like,
Where'd you go after they split the district?
I was at Cowan and then I went over to, South.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did, they went through it. I picked saxophone first, trumpet, and the violin was actually third. And they told me that my hands were too small to play saxophone when I was 9 in fourth grade.
Yeah.
They were like, maybe next year, which was a lie. They had too many sax players and they wanted to come up with an excuse.
Politics.
I know how it works. Yeah. So they need to have, they want to have an ensemble that's well-rounded. So, all right. So they did that. Trumpet, they had too many trumpet players. They flat out told me that. So they gave me a violin.
There's always too many trumpets. There's
entirely too many trumpet players. Not necessarily that many great trumpet players.
True.
But
true. It's not
a lot of guys that are like
that have trumpets.
Yeah. So guys with trumpets. Yeah. So they sent me home and they told you not to open up the case. And we got the instrument from the rental store and I get back and I ignored that because I did that with everything.
Yeah,
I wanted to know
too.
How it worked. So I opened it up and I figured out basically how to hold it correctly and how to, as correctly as you can without instruction.
Off the top of your head.
Yeah. And then went in there and, just bang, bang, bang. So sax the next year after that, I was really resistant to learn guitar because all my friends were learning guitar. And I'm like, I don't want to be the guy that plays guitar like everybody else.
Exactly.
But then I realized how successful they were with the girls. So
true.
I picked up a guitar.
Also very true.
And that was just, it was like, what songs can I learn? And just blowing through
that's
them.
That's all she wrote. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm the same way. I can't, I don't know why we never.
It's bizarre, man. On paper, it makes no sense.
That we grew up at whatever. But
crazy, man. Yeah. So it's just been, another thing. And in guitar, it was self-taught in the beginning. But when I went to school for performance on violin, I minored in classical guitar and piano. So
okay.
I had way more formal instruction,
mm-hmm.
but, a lot of the things that I learned as a violinist, grafted over, and my mom was in a, top club act during the 70s.
Oh,
so
right on.
She was playing guitar and she was the lead vocalist. So I had, from the time I was like 2, instruction in how to harmonize on the spot.
Right.
And I mean, me and my
That's
little sister,
good, man.
It was constant.
That's one thing I could never learn and no one around me knew.
Yeah.
And, harmonize. I'm not a great singer to begin with, but it's a good thing to know how to do.
It is, man. I didn't realize that we were being like groomed to do this for a living.
No, it's funny. Yeah. I guess I was forced to start learning piano at 6. And now I wish I knew more about theory when I was 8 than I do now. Cause I love, if you don't keep banging it out and learning more, then you lose it.
It's true.
It's like it's learning a language. I think I can tell you that.
Absolutely.
But, there's other things in life that I wanted to pursue and
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, man.
Yeah.
To each their own.
But I think it's good for kids to learn music, matter what.
Yeah.
But so, I remember playing with you in orchestra. You were always the first chair.
Yeah.
And, after high school, you went to college to study music.
Bingo.
And, then what'd you do after college?
Well, I was kind of making the transition in college already to pl- playing professionally. So mm-hmm. I was doing session work. I was doing the whole hired gun thing where I'd go out and do a clip of dates with whoever. And
mostly violin work.
Mostly violin. Actually, violin, it was weird. In college, it wasn't until I went to, there was a house I used to party at, like, sometimes a couple times a week.
Right.
And they had actually converted, all the guys from Jackass were actually, like, real tight with the guys that lived at this house. So we all had, like, this same clique, and they converted the whole downstairs of this house into a skate park.
Oh, wow.
So we had, they had modified the drywall so you could, they could put, like, a keg in the wall. And then,
so it's not wasting floor
exactly,
space.
Exactly. So floor space wasn't wasted. And they had speakers built into the, and like PA speakers built into
bad,
the walls.
That's bad. Man.
And there was always like a, you know, a setup for musicians. So
right.
There'd be like skate sessions during parties. There'd be, you know, 150 people in the house crowded around this strip of a ramp.
Yeah.
They took out the ceiling in the kitchen. So, you know, when you would drop in or, you know, go up to the top of the ramp, you wouldn't, you know, smash your head open.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this kind of shit going on the whole time.
That's cool.
And they do these half hour blocks or whatever. And then when the skaters would take a break, the musicians would come on.
Right.
So we'd play, and they always had like house instruments.
Uh-huh.
So I did this one, came into one, this party this one time. And, you know, usually what happens is you got a guy with a guitar at a party mm-hmm. and they're not giving that guitar up,
mm-mm.
you know? So,
regardless
all guitars
of skill.
Exactly. Oh my God. So this guy's just like hammering away, playing like D, G, and C over and over yeah. and like buzzing the strings. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, anybody have any other instruments? And they're like, Fitzy, you play violin, don't you? And I was like, yeah. Nobody ever really even saw me in the school music building. Like I practiced in my apartments and whatever.
Yeah.
And, kept all that to myself. I mean, that was just, you know, that's what I did.
Me
and,
too.
You
me
know.
Too. Yeah.
So, I was like, yeah,
I'm still like that.
It's like, yeah, I play the violin. So they gave me a violin and started riffing on it. And the whole party just, it was like the whole like record stop. I was like,
yeah.
And everybody was just like, what the fuck? And people dug it. And so after that, I started bringing my own violin to those parties and, you know, transitioned to playing more bars doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just been like, it's weird, man. Like the whole stepping stone, you know, when you look back, you're like, I guess it couldn't have gone any other way, but when it's happening, it's just like,
it's
where
cool,
am I going
man.
Right now?
Well, there aren't many, you know, people doing exactly what you're doing, mm-hmm. I would say. And I mean, let's hear some of that. This is the Duke Nukem theme.
Yeah, man.
And this is you playing
everything.
Everything.
Yeah, and the production work too.
Yeah. Shit, man, that's awesome. And the cool thing, I think the appeal is that it like kind of sounds like, you know, an overdriven electric guitar, but then there's parts that also sound like a violin and they both sound awesome. So
thank you.
It's fucking cool, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to do, you know, like I want to, you know, as politely as possible, you know, I want to try to put some people out of business, I guess. You know what I mean? Like I can come out and play stuff that sounds like a synthesizer, like sound like a mini Moog, or I can be a violinist, or I can sound like a, you know, filtered sax, or I can sound like an electric guitar, and it's all cool. On the same instrument. Yeah. I mean, I love it. So, you know, hope other people do as well.
That's awesome. And the fact that you can do what you love for a living is, I envy that. I'm working towards it with the comedy and stuff, but,
yeah, man, it's a journey, dude. I mean, and you're never there, and you're never, you know, you're never done with it.
No, that's the cool part.
Yeah.
And, when you think you're done, then you are.
That's the truth. Yeah. Never get comfortable. Like never think, like if you ever think too highly of yourself or anything, like as soon as you get to that point, like you're done. Like whenever you think like there's nothing that anybody can teach you anymore, or, you know, like, the whole Kanye attitude, like, oh, you're fucked.
Jesus, I'm tired of that. And let's talk about that.
Indeed.
Speaking of Kanye, he's on this ridiculous song with Katy Perry.
Yeah.
I don't listen to pop music, but I heard this the other day. And it's called E.T.
Yeah, I actually made a post about this on Facebook, and the feedback it got... It's just like every 3 seconds there was somebody else making a comment. And I just made a comment about like, you know, today I'm going to go into the studio and write a song with four on the floor, Euro synths, and I'm going to write it about sex with aliens and a bunch of other weird shit. And I mean, that's like 3 or 4 songs on the radio right now.
It's ridiculous. What is that? I mean,
when did that become a trend?
I don't know. I guess it came with the auto tune with the sexy pop music. And now... it's okay to fuck aliens, dude.
I guess so. It's like, I sound like a robot. What would I fuck?
An alien.
It's the natural progression.
Clearly.
Fuck me. I don't know.
It's bizarre, man. Like, I mean, I think about stuff that would have been considered, like, the geekiest shit in the entire world 15 years ago.
Exactly.
Everybody that is, like, in the pop spectrum. Like, I mean, if you look at, like, you go into, like, a high school cafeteria these days, or on the freaking highway, and you look at anybody, I mean, so many people are on their phones, you know, bent over their phones.
Yes.
I saw a group of high school kids walking down the street. I was playing in Philly, in University City, I guess a month ago, and there were like 8 kids, and they were all a group together, and nobody's talking. They're all just like bent down looking at their phones. Yeah. I'm like, you are kidding me, man. Like,
it's crazy. Everyone's linked into this other shit all the time.
It's bizarre. So that whole thing, I do it too.
Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, like, I've definitely walked around looking at my phone. Yeah, but
yeah, and it's a nice thing if you're feeling uncomfortable in a situation. Boom, on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. It is the new hands in the pockets.
Yeah, or look away. Yeah.
Or the look away.
But with the music. Where do you fall with, like? Because I mean. When will people get tired of this shit? Like, the pop started going downhill. I mean, I knew I was never a huge fan of pop, like modern pop, but it seems like now it's overwhelming.
You
think it can't get any more homogenized and
crazy,
packaged,
man,
in this neat little cute box and shit.
And then it does.
And it does.
It's
in a cuter box.
Yeah, in a cuter box, yeah.
With more auto-tune.
And but less frills.
Yes.
It's to the point now, I mean, where a lot of music, I feel, you listen to it and you go, anybody could make this music.
Anybody could. Like, especially with things like Fruity Loops and auto-tune, you don't have to be able to play music or sing to play music or sing.
It's terrible. It's terrible. I mean, I think it's great that creating content, and I mean, I feel like that might be the only word to describe it
like
at times.
Like this, podcasting, it's an independent way of...
It's great.
Of this, delivery
right.
of content.
And this
content.
Couldn't have happened 10 years, even like 10, 15 years ago.
That's
it
awesome.
Really was out of reach. I mean, the price of gear has come down. But I think as a result, though, there's a saturation. So
oversaturation.
Total oversaturation. And it's negatively impacting all of us. I think that the number of musicians that are willing to go out and, regardless of if they're, you know, of a high level of playing or, you know, the opposite, going out and playing for free in places is hurting all of us. Like this whole,
I think that's true for music, comedians, and podcasting.
Anybody that's an entertainer, you're providing a service, and like there's this like lack of self worth.
The more noise there is out there, it's hard to hear one person's voice.
Exactly,
and it's hard to find the good content out of 50 shitty bands or podcasts or comedians.
Like, right. I mean, it's something that really frustrates me. I mean, there's original venues all over the country, all over the world, but what is common, at least in the States, is they expect you to come in and play for free. Nobody values, and it's usually management types, they don't value what we do. And no, those that do it proficiently, man, like it's terrible. I mean, I've kind of stopped playing, like the original circuit because I mean, the reason I don't need to play the original circuit is because I can play other people's music. So yeah. I can go out and play for 4 hours and it's not something that, is difficult for me to right. do. So I don't have to play these original rooms, and I've stopped doing it because, like, as a guy that does this, needs to eat from doing this.
Yes, that's like, another thing that people don't think about. Like, you know, and doing this, I've been doing this for a year now, and you know, you learn by mistakes. Like,
absolutely.
I pay for hosting my show, right?
Right.
So I'm paying for this, and giving it away, and like. I had one show where I was like, you know, I'm going to start asking for donations or whatever. And like, God damn, people were like, you know, you put work into something and you feel it has value right. for me.
Right.
But to have, I didn't like demand money, but, and I wouldn't, but you know, I thought about going to a subscription format, but at my level, it wouldn't work.
It's tough, man. It's a balancing act.
But it's funny, like, if you give something away, then if you ask at a later time people for some sign of value for that thing, they're like, well, what the fuck? As for some reason.
Yeah, but you wouldn't ask you know, like, there's this whole thing of, you know, going back to musicians, any entertainer, you wouldn't ask a mechanic to fix your car for free to see if you're going to hire him to fix other things for you. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfortunate, you know, going back to that, like that we do have to, at some point in our careers, do shit for free to build up enough steam that people will pay money for
right.
it. And, what's unfortunate is if you build relationships with, you know, say you regularly work a venue, once you get to the point that you're, you know, that you know, are finally feeling like this is really worth something. You know, this has value. They don't see it that way. They're like, well, we've been getting you for this much or nothing for,
so why now should we then?
Yeah. Why, what has changed? And they don't see things, but I mean, how is people that create, you know, let's just generalize it. How are people that create content supposed to improve and generate better content if they can't dedicate all their effort to
exactly.
it? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like maybe it would have, despite all the technology that's around, like, you know, I feel like I could have really fit in well in the 70s. It would have been a tougher road, but I think it would have been a road I could have traveled. But 500 years ago, when there were patrons of the arts, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of shit doesn't really happen that much anymore.
No. The endowment shit is like, and everyone's cutting back their, well, there's no budgets to be speak of anymore. I mean, anyway, anymore. So, and now the arts and stuff are the first things to be cut. And, I don't know.
It's terrible, man. Where money is, considered important to be placed.
Our priorities. Yeah. Yeah.
If I made it huge, I would put, like, all of my money back into programs to guarantee that there would be a future for what I love. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I love doing what I do, and I want to continue to do it and do it for bigger audiences because right. I want to, like, share that whole thing. I mean, there's nothing like playing for a room of 3,000 people that are all, like, it's an experience, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's, for my end, it's something to stand there and make people laugh. From your stupid thoughts or stories, it's amazing.
People, you know, getting out something that you know, you put something into it, you're getting something back out, but you want other people to get something out of it, man.
Exactly. It's a communication. It's a form of communication, really. Yeah.
It's a total hippie concept, but it doesn't make it bullshit.
It's human. I think it's old as, you know, people gathering around the fire at night because there's nothing else to do, and then they'll tell a story.
Right.
Entertainment will never go away. The delivery systems are changing.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it took the rug out from under the corporate structures.
Definitely.
You know, terrestrial radio has, I think, you know, I think someone pulled the plug and that the water's slowly draining out of that eventually, even though there's still a lot of big corporations tied up in it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, in some ways it is thriving. And I think the only way it's going to continue is if, you know, they've got to innovate. They've got to offer something that we can't get somewhere else. And I mean,
exactly.
We're in an era right now, though, that like there aren't many DJs. I mean, the only stations I can think of that have like a DJ, MMR and out of Philly.
Yeah. You know? And some that sound like they are DJs are remote, like recordings of just, you know,
those like stations that are named after, you know, like Ben FM and stuff like that.
Yeah. What the hell?
104.5 has even kind of switched to that format where there's very the DJs seldom are a live from DJ
somewhere in the Midwest and they record it or something like that. And it's tapes or not tapes anymore, but
but
it's pre-recorded.
It's funny that we all still say, oh, I'll tape that.
Yeah, and I DVR shit all the time and say, oh, I taped it. I'll always say it.
No, absolutely. It's part of a lexicon.
Exactly. Good way to put it.
Indeed.
So,
word of the day, bitches. Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding. This is where the couch.
What?
Yeah, I'm Pee-wee. So, let's get back to a little bit of you. A little bit of you. I guess the, since high school, I kind of, I guess we became friends on Facebook, but you know, I hadn't seen you. And then, all of a sudden I just start hearing all this shit about you. And, why don't we talk a little bit about that? How the beginning of that.
Yeah.
It was a contest, a YouTube contest.
Yeah, it was a YouTube contest.
And this is back... It's crazy. It wasn't that long ago, but
2008 feels forever ago.
It was when YouTube. Well, I guess by then it was pretty big, but it was still.
Not everybody was on it. It wasn't like assimilated into every website. Like, you know, MySpace still had its own native video format, and
so that kind of puts things in.
Yeah, really. Yeah, people were still using MySpace. Let's use that. That will be in the history books. It'll be a bullet.
Captures the zeitgeist. So, go ahead.
So, yeah. I a friend of mine told me about this competition, that was you basically, the end game was that you would play with, the Foo Fighters at the Grammys. And, you know, I'd done competitions online and in person in the past. And the online ones for me, I was just like,
Had you won some of them?
We did like a lot of, like when I was in college, I did like a lot of online indie film competitions and stuff. We did that kind of stuff. And that was probably the extent, musically, you know, I don't think I'd really done any online ones up to that point. But a friend of mine told me about it and, I, in typical me fashion, something that wasn't that pertinent, I waited till the last minute. So it was like the videos were due, like a half hour before I recorded mine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Was and the first take,
thing, it was the first take. It was for the Pretender. So what you did was, they actually give you a lead sheet and you know, I didn't need a lead sheet. I listened to the song. I had been familiar with it cause it was on the radio. So,
it's not Chopin.
Right. So I mean, great, you know, composition and everything, but, you know, it was easy for me to internalize it. So I you were supposed to basically like play through it and kind of add your own touch. So I treated it, I built an arrangement. There it is. Built it, you know, on the spot. And that's what I do as a musician, you know, as an improviser.
That was just improvised.
On the spot. I went down to the basement, where I have, you know, my studio gear and, I just threw a camera on top of a stack of amps and plugged into one of them and I went, all right. And I thought the tune in my head and then I started playing it and I had to keep it under a certain number of seconds. And I knew that I wanted to do stuff that was, you know, flashy. So the bowing technique in that is not easy.
It looks like it's ripping. Pieces hanging up the top.
Pretty destructive on the bows. Yeah. Actually, just before I came here earlier today, I had to pick up my bows because from you know get them rehaired.
How long does it last?
A rehair job. When I was a classical player, primarily, I could get like a year and a half, 2 years out of a bow. Now, like on tour, I mean, we were stopping in different towns trying to find bows because I would go so many in the course of like a month. Yeah, and it's not a cheap thing.
How much is it?
A rehair, I mean, a good bow, you're looking, you know, the bottom end of the spectrum is like $350, and then they can go up to several thousand. And for me, I don't really notice a huge difference between like a $500 bow and a $2,500 bow. It's really, really subtle.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can get by, but the rehair is around like $100. I mean, a set of strings on a violin is like $150.
Is it really? It's yeah. not like a guitar.
No, it's not. Yeah. So, you know, needless to say, I have a lot less sets of strings,
yeah.
you know, regularly yeah. with me. You don't break them nearly as often,
mm-hmm.
but, oh, with that video, you know, I wanted to do something that would show what I could do technically. And, so yeah, I played through it and I was like, that works. And yeah. I turned off the camera yeah. and I threw it up there, and I woke up in the morning after submitting it, and it had, had a lot of views. And people were still using, here's another thing to put a timestamp. People were still using Instant Messenger.
There so you go. Right.
I shot the link around to people and I was like, yo, pass this around if you yeah. dig it. You know, yeah. it's for this competition, you know, whatever. Go on the site and click thumbs up if you dig it. So I woke up in the morning and it had, I think it had about, you know, like 500 or 600 views, which, you know, with no promo
overnight
is
that's good.
Yeah. I think it's still impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So, It kept going and it kept getting more and more votes. And then, what happened is after they closed the submissions, they did a week of like people just kind of voting on them. And I was voted into the top, I think I was voted into the top 40.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think at what point the Grammy panel, like where they came in, but, the way it worked, there were, I think like 1,000 submissions.
Right.
And the Grammy panel picked 40.
Okay.
They let people, you know, comment and vote on them and stuff, but they had the ultimate decision. So they yeah. picked 40 of us, and then they opened voting again. And at that point, I was getting support from like some of the local radios. I think I got a call from the Grammy people about it, and they were like, you know, if you make it into the top 15, you'll hear from us again.
Right.
And I was like, awesome. So that kept going and stuff. And, I ended up getting into the top 15. And when that happened, you know, I got the phone call for it and the news outlets in Philly. So like the couple television stations and mm-hmm. a couple of the radio stations, some of them came out on site, and then, you know, the radio stations, obviously I didn't do a field broadcast. Yeah, I went to the studio yeah. and they gave me huge, huge support.
Right.
And, the listening cool. on it's Preston and Steve show on MMR. Yep. They're amazing. And, so I went on the air and I played over the track, just improv and stuff. Right. And they were like, what? And, you know, I had me playing Van Halen and shit on vinyl.
I remember. I remember hearing yeah. that. Yeah.
That was exciting. Cause I'd been listening to them since I was, you know, 11.
Yeah.
You know, right around the time I actually really got into the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I, you know, that was surreal
like
for me.
Sixth grade.
Yeah. Sixth yeah. grade. Exactly. Everybody drumming out Everlong yeah. and stuff on yes. the lunch tables.
We played that. I was in a band with Chris Cattell.
Yes,
and
sir,
Ian
man.
Messenger.
Yeah. yeah. My God.
Damn.
So yeah. That was nuts. And, I got a ton of votes on that, tons of plays, and it was, you know, rocketing up to, you know, 100,000. And then, I was shopping and I didn't know if I was gonna, I was amped that I was in the top 15. Yeah. I was like, shit, I'm going to LA. I'm yeah. gonna, you know, I'm maybe in the running here. And they opened they had the voting going, and I got a call from, somebody at the, like the PR at the Grammy Foundation. And right. they were like, hey, if you, you know, we're going to be figuring out who's in the top three pretty soon. And, you know, if you're in the top three, you'll hear from us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, cool. And they were like, do you have any questions about this and this? So we talked for a couple of minutes. And then before she hung up, she was like, all right, I'll talk to you later on. And I was like, that was kind of weird. And then I got a call from her like 2 hours later and she was like, yeah, you're in the top three. And I'm like, ah!
So she was kind of new or just, do you think she
I think
just
it was
said,
just like a slip of the, yeah, yeah that whole thing. So, I mean, I don't know if that was just like,
But you were probably thinking that the entire time until the next
yeah,
call.
Yeah, the entire
like,
time until the next
she,
call. I was like, why did she say that? Like, is it just like a, you know, common, like a pleasantry and you know, like, yeah, hey, see you later. Like, I'm never going to see you again.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
what? So... It was, that was really crazy. And I got out there and, you know, we had rehearsals and John Paul Jones was the director
yeah.
for it. And
yeah.
Like,
how, what?
Nuts. yeah. So, you know, the whole thing was crazy, man. Rehearsals all week with the Foos, shot the shit with them. We went out to a bunch of red carpet events. The
yeah.
cat that we hung out with the most, I'd say, minus John Paul, was Pat Smear.
Really?
Who wasn't yet officially back in the band.
I was
going
to say, yeah.
And
that dude's hilarious.
He is awesome, man. Yeah, I was like, you're freaking Pat Smear. Yeah. You played the Nirvana Unplugged.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was just nuts.
And he's a nice down to earth guy.
Totally down to earth. Yeah, it was.
Did
just
he play
so
that?
Whatever. He did play that. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he was there with his guitar around his ankles.
Yeah. Oh my God. I don't know how that guy doesn't. I have so many problems with my back and my arms and all this shit. Like, man. I don't know how he's not.
What's he got? He's in a hospital, 10, man. You know, at least 15 years on us, right?
Yeah. I don't know. His arms are easily 5 feet long.
What did he do after he left the first time, Foo Fighters?
I don't know what he did, man. I mean, he could have been cutting lawns. Like, he just vanished, man. Yeah.
So it wasn't like a falling out.
Yeah, probably just like him and Novoselic, those guys. Like, what happened? You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm sure they kept playing music.
You know, because they do come from that, well, you know, Novoselic comes from that, like, punk background, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted to disappear after a while.
I don't care about anything.
Yeah, fuck this. Made my money. I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows what it was, but
yeah.
I mean, everybody needs a break after some amount of time. And touring is rough.
It's not easy, yeah.
It's really rough.
I think I'm built for it, personally, but I realize it's nice to have a place to come back to and, you know, leave every morning. But it's nice to see different places. I like
it
that.
Meet people and
do your thing for different audiences.
Exactly. That's the coolest thing, man. I mean, like, having the challenge of trying to win over a new audience every single night is one of the most fulfilling things I think you can do.
How about, like, well, we didn't even finish the Grammys, I guess. So you hung out with
So
Pat Smear.
Hung out with them. We went to a bunch of red carpet things.
How long were you out there?
Only a week.
Okay.
And I it's amazing how much stuff got packed in that week.
Do you rehearse every day?
We rehearsed every day. By the I think like the fourth day, they were just like, yeah, we really don't need any more rehearsals. So we were good to go. Then they did the competition was for the final three of who would get this, you know, featured solo, which is, I thought it was going to be like a solo, you know, the type of solo I'm used to now where like you take a cadenza and you like, you know, do something that's your own, an improvised thing.
What, was this a pre-written
solo? You know, it was pretty, but it you know,
didn't showcase what you could or would have done.
Right. So we were competing at that point on the air,
and that was down to three.
Down to three of us. It was.
I think I became friends with a girl named Tina.
Tina Guo.
Yeah.
Cellist. She actually, for whatever reason, she wasn't in the top three.
Oh, she wasn't.
She wasn't. Yeah. But we did a little jamming while we were out there, and she's you know, she's one of the best cellists. Yeah, I know. I'm friends with her on
Facebook. I just see she's playing in a orchestra or something in Mexico right now or something.
Yeah, she's doing a tour right now. I think Mexico and South America and stuff. It's she's, weird.
I mean,
she's
I never met her. I'm just, you know, it's funny.
Yeah. It's wild, man. The connection that you just seeing this stuff come up, all these different people.
Yeah.
I think I made a comment about it recently, like on Facebook, just that like I look at my news feed and I've changed it recently so I see everybody.
Yeah, because they changed it to filter to just the most interactive. I changed it back myself too. Yeah. I don't filter my shit. Like,
right. Yeah, like this is what you want. Yeah, don't tell me what I want. Yeah, God damn it. So, but
that's
an
annoying part of everything being linked together now.
It is, man.
But so, go ahead.
No worries. You know, I see it in my feed, like at least 80% of the people that I'm friends with out of, it's like, you know, on there, maybe like 1600 people or something.
Yeah.
So almost all of them are entertainers or musicians, or like creative, any type of entertainer, creative people, artists, musicians, entertainers, creators. And, you know, like looking at that, I'm like, I can't imagine what people's feeds that don't have this type of like, you know, if you want to call it a circle, like what does that even look like? Like eating frosted flakes, cutting the grass.
Oh God.
Scratching my ass.
Some
like,
of the people, I cannot stand what some of the stuff that you see on there.
It is weird, man. We're in this weird era where like everything is important. Like I rarely post anything on Facebook other than like, this is what I'm doing that, you know, I want to share with people.
Exactly,
like
yeah.
If I got to like,
some,
you know,
fucking asinine statement about what you're doing.
Cutting fruit.
Yeah, like
awesome, dude.
OMG.
Yeah, OMG. LOL. Raffle.
It is ridiculous, but used properly, it's cool to have that.
It is.
Network.
I mean, you feel connected to people that are like, you know, 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, and even if they were close, you just don't have energy to keep up in life that many people. And
even all the good, like the best friends that I've got, I barely get to see them.
Me too. And that's the way it is. If you want to, you know, you can either bullshit around with your friends, or you can like, for stuff that goals that we have, you have to fucking be on it all day. And
yeah,
for me, I still have to have a day job to slowly build this, like,
it's tough, man,
into something where I can actually do what I want to do.
Right. Like, I barely have enough time in the day, in the week, in the year, in the month, whatever, mm-hmm. to do what I'm doing. And I do it full time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's,
yeah. So this is like, what I love is my side project right now, and it right. sucks. You know, it's not fulfilling, but
yeah,
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. Let's talk about good shit.
Yeah, good shit.
So anyway,
there were two other people, me, Tara Klein, the cellist. I think she's out of like Cincinnati or Chicago or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the third violin, you know, the other act, the third person, Anne-Marie Calhoun. It was a weird competition. The criteria was that you could be, you could do it basically full time, but being a like established already like national act, like you weren't supposed to be in the competition.
Like if you were signed to a deal major, yeah.
or already a, majorly, touring national act or whatever.
To keep it kind of amateur.
Still kind of amateur. So, I mean, though, like, me and everybody else, we were like session players. I mean,
yeah.
most everybody that was from at least the West Coast out there, I see them on television in the pits, mm-hmm. like on, they do American Idol. They do,
there's
the
a lot
music.
Of work. Out
there's
there.
Tons of work.
And
yeah.
Me too, man. I wish, eventually I'm going to, if I really go for this, yeah. then I'm going to have to move out there. Cause that's where the work is.
It's true. And I mean, I want to get back out there. I feel like I need to be a little bit bigger of a fish before I get back out there, just because
not only the work, but networking right. too.
From a networking standpoint, I mean, the amount of work
there.
I was offered while I was out there
yeah,
that
yeah.
I couldn't come through on because I didn't have the capital to put down. Like it was like,
right.
Shit, I could take these jobs, but what am I going to do? Like, I have no place to stay.
I was going
to
say, you can't, and it's expensive to bounce back right. and forth at this point.
And if they're willing to pay for my expenses, my port to port, cool. I'll yeah. take a lower amount of money, but
for travel.
Yeah, yeah. Ultimately they still paying me the same. It's just, it's coming out, it's, appropriation of funds
yeah,
or whatever the
exactly.
hell you want to call it.
Yeah.
But, so like, I mean, everybody in there was, pretty much a professional musician, but she had actually just come off tour with Ringo.
No shit.
And she played with, she still plays with Steve Vai.
Oh, wow. And, so she sucks.
So, yeah, she's a great violin player. She was doing some stuff with Dave Stewart, too, from the Eurythmics.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
anybody that Steve Vai would take with him,
absolutely.
That's enough right there.
Yeah.
Old is she?
She's probably just about 30.
Okay.
She might be 29.
Mm-hmm.
But, she should be 30. A little bit of a hawk in the competition, but, she was, they introduced us. I think Jason Bateman was the host.
That's right. That's right.
And,
love that guy.
I liked him more before I met him. It kind of ruined
I don't like stories like that.
It ruined my vision of Teen yeah. Wolf. Yeah,
I was gonna say Arrested Development, but yeah, that's
no. I'm taking it yeah. deep, man. I'm digging into the
shame.
The archives.
Kind of dickish, or?
Yeah, a little bit. Like off camera, I was like, "Wow, I liked you a lot more before I."
That's
knew
a shame.
The Foo Fighters were great. I mean, yeah. like I was like, these guys are exactly how I thought they'd be. These are the kind of guys that would do a music video with a giant phone, giant hands.
Yes.
Exactly.
And dresses.
Drummer and drag. Yeah. Ridiculous. So we introduced us. We did like the whole, if you want to vote for so-and-so, press yeah. this. And then like they'd have to like, hold our finger up like we're number one or two or three. So, it was in front of a live audience.
It's amazing what producers at a high level, how awful their ideas are.
Yeah, and their stress level and how high it is.
Maybe that's
why the stage manager was like losing his mind all day. I mean, like we had little technical problems here and there.
Flipping
it was
out.
Nuts. Just flipping out. Yeah. So
was it like, what everybody imagines in their head of like a, Hollywood stage producer? Like
everything. Absolutely. To a T. I was like, if there's anything I expected that I was right about, it's this.
It's like a Simpsons character.
Totally, man. Yeah. It was crazy. And we're like outside the Staples Center. and there's a crowd, I guess it was like 2,500 people that we were playing for. And it was basically in the parking lot of the Staples Center, like this pavilion kind of thing. And so they came around to voting time. I think it was like 5 o'clock Pacific. And they were like, you know, like take, you know, 5 seconds. You get 5 seconds, take 10 seconds or something like that to just, you know, like ad lib a little bit. Show us what you got. And they went around and did that. And
Musically.
Yeah, so the three of us are playing. And Anne-Marie had this like huge rehearsed thing that she does at every show with Steve Vai. And she played like, you know, half a minute of that. And I was like, fuck, I should rehearse something. It didn't even occur to me to rehearse something.
And all the everything going on.
Yeah. And I was like, I played what I did. I was like, you know what? I'm here with freaking John Paul Jones and the Foo Fighters. I'm going to play Part of All My Life. And then I'm going to go into like, I'll play the dum, 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 dum. And then I went into Black Dog. And then I did, you know, like some little riffing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about this almost every day of what I would play differently.
Yeah, counting backwards.
It's crazy, man. And I know, like, I'm still so early in my career, but, like, I do think about that. I mean, I think about every performance I've ever done and, like, the little things I would change.
But
that one, especially because it was such a big, you know, opportunity. But she took it, and I'd love to see, like, what the... you know, what the percentage breakdown on our votes were, because I know the support I had in Philly was, like... crazy, you know.
When
what I mean, like
down to three
to
people,
three, you know
it's
what I mean?
Completely subjective, and
I was hyped, man. I mean, like we already won, you know what I mean? Like we're freaking there, so like I could care less about it. And it was to play, you know, a pre-written solo and everything. So we get up there, and I guess like ironically, the sound man screwed up and didn't have her mic on
during her solo.
So,
and it was recorded that way.
It was recorded that way. It went out live that way. I mean, I would imagine we had like a 5 second delay, you know what I mean? Just the FCC buffer basically.
Yeah.
her solo didn't go out, so nobody heard it. And, they actually didn't fade in, most of the independent mics until like partway into our pit thing. So me and Amory and Tara and I'm trying to think who else were like this core four, you know, quartet. And we played, you know, the beginning arrangement while Dave's, you know, singing in the beginning. And
yeah, that's right.
It was surreal. I mean, I'm sitting right next to freaking Taylor, you know, his drum shield. And it was amazing. I mean, so we had that. We went out to the Grammy party. Dave got us into, you know, not just the general one. He got us into the one at the Beverly Hills. So we went out there, like at a freaking party with John Mayer and Aretha Franklin.
That's
and like,
nuts. That's
I'm like,
nuts.
Where am I? Like, you know, I had a freaking razor and nobody was posting photos to, Facebook still had, I think had a wall at that point that you could erase what you wrote.
Yes.
Like you could erase other people's messages. You had to sign your name and stuff.
Yeah.
So like nobody was posting stuff. And I was like, if this happened now, like what I'm able to do as a networker and everything, like if I knew what I knew now, besides that, just like, you know, like, you know, spreading stuff and being like, look at this.
Yeah.
My phone filled up and then I'd have to delete it. And then the entire inbox would be full, like in a minute again. And it was just nonstop. It was like, you're on TV right now.
Yeah.
That's
amazing, right?
It was amazing. So, I mean, if there's a, you know, a high point, it's that. And I feel like I'm rambling about it.
No, it's fine. You lead me right to the next. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, I would like, to, you know, I mean, it's not like you
go from that and then playing a bar a week later.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was weird. That was really weird
because, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's not like you ramped up to that. It was within a very short time. And
it was super small window.
The Grammys, you know?
Right. I was playing bars, I think still only making like 75 or 100 bucks a night playing, you know, really tiny places. And, you know, then doing that. And when I got back, I mean, it was funny the whole week leading up to it. anybody that I had ever played with for any, you know, appreciable length of time, even people I'd only done like two or three gigs, were blasting out stuff to their mailing list, like laying claim to me, like that I was with their groups and stuff.
Sure.
And I'm like, is this really what it comes down to?
It's
like when you have any success,
weeds
like
out, some people, you know, it shows. I think, when you hit the next level and the people around you don't, it kind of shows you what you mean to them.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
Or what they could use you for.
Right, right. I mean, I think you're often perceived as an asset. And yeah, and less of, you know, like a collaborator or whatever.
You know what I'm getting at? Like, they could be leeching, and also they could be really good, genuine people.
Right. Well, but I think all of us, I mean, we gravitate toward things that can better our, exactly, our own interests. I mean, I think it's a human behavior. Now, yeah, whether the manner in which you do it is what makes us, you know,
your motives.
Yeah. That's everything.
Yeah. So, okay. So coming off the Grammys,
coming home. Yeah.
And, oh, we haven't mentioned your band with your sister, by the way, is also,
yeah,
an excellent musician, multi instrumentalist also.
Yeah.
Brenna. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Everybody messes her name up. Yeah. She's been dealing with that. The worst is when it's printed and in somebody's hands and they're just looking at it, and it's like, it's an easy name to sound out.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, if I was reading it, I would have said Brenna.
Absolutely. I know you're not looking at the screen.
Yeah.
I just, it was wild. Like when we would get introduced, you know, and whoever was introducing us decided to like name us individually, and they'd be looking at it and they'd be like, Brenda, but like, there's no D in her name. Like, yeah, like
that sucks.
Brian.
Yeah. Brian.
So it's so stupid. We play together. We've kind of, you know, gone our own ways in the last 2 years, and it,
so that band is no longer.
Well, we did a festival.
What was that?
Leaving Cash.
Yes, exactly.
Leaving Cash. So,
which was our high school? Was it named after?
It was a reference. Yeah, because I mean,
Coatesville Area School District is,
yeah, senior high.
Senior high, excuse, yeah. Cash.
So I mean, we all looked at each other, and you know, the original band was four of us, and we were all different ages, like ranging like five years apart, at the most, and all of us had groups that were like, you know, had started to build up steam and then they fell apart. So we're like, let's start a band together. And we started it for a battle of the bands.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, oh, why the hell? We'll just do a battle of the bands and we'll see how that goes. We won it. And then we entered another one and we won that. And then we just kept like entering stuff and just like, you know, winning.
Yeah.
And it was like, obviously this is a good combination.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's keep working. And we started writing material together and, like more material together. And, you know, it grew and grew, and we got pretty busy playing clubs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is, actually around the time of the Grammys, I'd been playing with Leaving Cash for 3 years.
Okay.
And when I got home, I was getting calls from like local television stations about coming on and doing morning shows and stuff.
Yeah.
And I went and I did that. And one of the shows was the 10 show,
sure,
on NBC. So I came down Leaving Cash. They asked me if they wanted me to perform, and they were like, do you have a group? And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, what material should we do? And we had just been talking about playing this song that our bass player had written. He was like, I think it'd be really cool if you played the lead on the violin instead of on the guitar. And I'm like, all right, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
So we did the song. I think we ran over it in the green room and we played it for the first time on the 10 show. And if you listen to how we do it now at shows, it's a totally
different
song. The way it sounds on the record, I mean, like, it sounds like, to me, going back and listening, I'm like,
yeah,
this is, you know, very, I consider it kind of amateurish, but, you know, it was a blast and it was received well and things kind of snowballed and I got a lot of calls, but I was the only one that was out of school and the only one that didn't, that could like pick up and go at a moment's notice.
Make the commitments.
So a lot of the offers we had to turn down and, you know, as anybody knows, once you,
it's kind of limiting to have to turn down what the goal is, you know,
right. Yeah. I'm like, this is the whole point of being in this band. And like, we had to turn it down. So, you know, the steam that we had, you know, built up, a lot of that momentum just kind of went away. And, you know, what happens is when you're not doing something, I mean, in the public eye, you're relevant for like 24 hours and then you're not.
Believe me. I know. If I don't put a show out, the next week I get all my numbers,
right,
everybody and where. And it's noticeable. If I don't do a show the next week when I do, the numbers are lower no matter what.
Yeah.
And it's just it's like a rule.
Right.
And, so that, like I said, I've learned by making mistakes and like, I don't always have time. That's another thing. I love doing this.
Right.
Like, especially like when I do my own shows, I have little pre-recorded, it's like radio theater, and then I'll do like,
right,
because it's just me, and it's yeah. it's a way to do
you
my
do
comedy
whatever format you want. Yeah,
because there aren't like clubs. I have to go to Philly to do comedy, which is fine, but it's easier for me to on a week-to-week basis.
Hell yeah, to do it, you know.
And I'm reaching people on a literally international audience now. I tell people Australia, South America, everywhere it's popping up.
That's
China.
Awesome, man.
It's weird.
Wow, you're breaking through the wall.
Yeah, somehow. I thought our internet wasn't allowed there.
I didn't think so. Yeah.
It's weird, though. It's
Speaking
crazy.
Of which, they're trying to do that shit here, man. There's a bill to protect IP
net,
bill.
Net neutrality.
It was trying where, to filtering.
The internet service providers will be allowed to say, we don't want you to use, if you're using our service, then okay, you can't use Google. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's a bill that they want to put into effect that'll allow our government to basically limit what sites we can access.
Oh, the government.
And it's all, there's this it's, Orrin Hatch and a couple other people that have been basically trying to get stuff through for like 15 years.
Yeah, sure.
It's all RIAA stuff. And I'm a member of the RIAA,
right.
But I don't believe in a lot of the things they're going after. Like,
well, the old models just aren't relevant.
Work.
And the old people, they're relics at this point. It's like,
they are
if
relics.
You don't keep up or at least listen to what's changing, then you're a relic.
And Orrin Hatch thinks he's relevant still. He wrote him and a couple of his cronies that you know seem to pull some weight, like wrote a song or something that really didn't ever do anything. But they think that, like, you know, they're championing this cause because like they're being robbed of, you know, potential income. That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I don't even know where to start with this.
Yeah, well, let's completely get off that tangent. Yeah. But seriously, it's some serious shit. You know.
So, okay, the band kind of fizzled out.
Kind of fizzled out, and I mean, we you know, we kept doing gigs, but the big offers, the ones that really would have, you know, brought us far further, went away. I mean, like, even calls that I was getting the week or two after the Grammys, like, was to come, like, we need a violinist, can you do Leno
really?
On, you know, Wednesday night, and I'm like, I'm back in Philly, like, what's the pay for it? And they're like, it's $1,000, and I'm like, all right, so get out to, you know, from there. I'm going to owe like $250 because it was like, you know, the night before or whatever.
So
like to get a flight.
Airfare's jacked up automatically.
To get a room, you know what I mean? Like by the time I'm done to go out there.
Break even if you're going to lose.
Yeah. A lot of the time, like I'd end up owing like, you know, $500 and it was like, I can't take these offers. Like I wish they'd keep
It's
coming.
Great exposure, but you know.
Killer. And it, would, you know, and it works that way. You get a call and you keep getting the calls. Like this band likes you. We're going to bring you on tour.
Yeah.
And it's rough to be a touring musician. I got a lot of friends that have toured with really, really big national acts as like, you know, Hired Guns, you know, like horn section
kind of
players
bands.
And stuff. A friend of mine played with John Legend for a while. I got friends that have played a lot of the drummers I've got. I'm a drummer with my trio who's taking a hiatus with us right now. He was Jill Scott's drummer for a while.
Nice.
Playing with a cat right now. Played with Music Soul Child.
Yeah. He's both from Philly.
Both from Philly.
Yeah.
There's a ton of guys that are like off tour musicians. I knew a lot of guys that toured around playing with, you know, big metal acts in like, you know, Eastern Europe, that kind of thing, which is a huge scene for them.
It's huge, booming. It's like there's so much. They're all about metal in like Sweden and Europe,
man. But it's rough. Unless you're the name on the bill or a member of the core group that's creating, you know, the music that you're playing.
People really don't.
You really don't make that much money. Like you can actually make about the same money playing. The higher, the closer to A room bars and clubs in your home city.
Yeah.
So it's,
and that's
it's
like a decision that you kind of have to make. I don't know if it's like that with musicians, but there's comedians that are the comedian's comedian.
Right.
That will just work in that city for the rest of their life, but doesn't take away from their talent. They could have gone on, but if you're comfortable, you don't have to travel, and you have these regular, you can play these rooms on a consistent basis.
Right.
It depends on
leave?
What you want, you know?
Right.
And is it like that with musicians?
I think so. It's very easy to become comfortable. And there's a song on the new record I just put out, which I have a copy of it for you.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a song on the end here, if
awesome.
You don't mind.
And, yeah.
But go ahead.
There's a song on there called Comfortable that's about, you know, the fact that you can't get comfortable. As soon as you get comfortable, man, just like, you know, we were saying earlier, you know, when you feel like you can't learn anything else, you're sunk. And I think it's really easy to become one of those. There's actually another song on the record. It's like a recurring theme for me. That it's very easy to become that old guy that's been playing bars for 30 years.
Yeah.
The same bars, and he's still playing the same cover songs. And, you know, gradually just becoming really mediocre and, you know, becoming content with it. It's tough for people that work a cash job for them. Like if you become a bartender or something and then you go back to school,
it's grueling.
It's really hard to go back to school because that cash in your pocket, you might be, you know, making twice the money when you get back out, but it's that whole cash in your pocket thing. Yeah. It's that immediacy. And I think it is tough to get out of that. I mean, I've been actively trying to transition out of being, you know, primarily like a bar musician. And I do a lot of private events and stuff, but I feel like I have offers on the table right now for me that would do really great things for me financially. Mm-hmm. But and as a musician, I'd still be doing what I love, but they would make me put down roots that I don't want to put down right now. It may be in 10 years, but like for me, I feel like it's settling. Even if you're like, it's even if it's a massive upgrade, like I, you know, like say you make like 3 or 4 times more.
Yeah.
But you're putting down, it's like throwing in the towel. It's like, well,
it's cutting you off from doing other stuff.
Right. And I don't want to, you know, I can't commit to things that like, the worst is when you start getting into stuff with contracts and they're contracts that are like for things that are years away.
Yeah.
And it's like when you sign a contract that you're going to be available for an event in 2015, you're saying there's no way that I'm going to have anything else going
exactly,
on.
And
I just like that whole thing for me, man, is something I don't want to fall into. And I know a lot of guys, man, that did the bar scene till their mid 30s and now they're working office jobs.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you would have just given that extra oomph, you wouldn't be working the office job.
It's not an easy thing to do to put, you know, to keep it as a career. But at the same time, I feel like, and, you know, I kind of gave up at some point before I even really tried to make music a profession. I think you and I were growing up and I was learning, I was always playing with sound and recording stuff is where this came from.
Yeah, you were one of the first guys I knew that had like a little, you know, portable multi-track.
Yeah, yep. And
I remember, I think, having a conversation with you in like a history class or something. You were asking me about the coaxial digital output.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird that I remember that?
That is weird, man.
You were like, you know, how would I route this? What does this run into?
Yeah.
I'm like, can I just use an RCA cable for it? And I was like, yeah, it's, you know, it, you know, the bandwidth and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's like, weird. Why do I remember that?
Oh, I remember.
I remember the teacher was the swimming coach.
Mr. Morris.
Yeah. And we were studying like, it's bizarre. I mean, like I can't usually remember the drive home.
Seriously.
But
I remember weird shit too, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, clearly the audience is very interested in like, the things that I remember.
That happened to us in high school.
Yeah, from high school.
But so what's your next move? What are you doing right now? And
I'm doing a lot of solo stuff because unfortunately, I can make a lot more money just playing solo.
Uh-huh.
And I build my, actually use a lot of looping equipment and I'll build my own beats live.
I like that stuff. Yeah.
And then I also program them at home and sometimes I'll lay down the tracks live. Other times I'll program drums.
Yeah, make your own accompaniment.
Exactly. And those backing tracks, you know, are great because when I was starting out and I was playing the bar gigs, if I didn't have at least one other person there, I couldn't, you know, take solos on violin. Like,
yeah, it's just you wailing and nothing.
Right, like there's no context, you know what I mean? So
exactly.
It's enabled me. It's very empowering. But I've been doing that. I've got a trio that we're actually going to be working on. I think this summer and fall, we're going to be working on a new record. And taking that to a couple different management companies for, you know, management for the group. But we're also taking it to Soul Lives label.
Okay, yeah.
Because there's a lot of common ground there. And I mean, these two guys are just some of the most virtuosic. I have so much respect for these cats.
That's the drummer that played with Jill Scott?
Yeah.
Nice.
And he's just the stuff going on in their heads is unbelievable.
It's keys, violin and drums.
Yeah. And I mean, I do guitar and vocals as well in that group, but, you know, the thing that we get really recognized for is the electric violin, me vocals,
play bass and
left-hand
bass.
And
lead.
His left hand, and his patches too, but his left hand, rivals, And this cat can shred while walking insanely complex lines. Like, cause we'll do everything from straight ahead bebop to, and we've played metal. I mean, we've done Alice in Chains stuff and then played, you know, Charlie Parker.
Yeah.
And like back to back.
Contextually. Yeah. I like Charlie Parker. Anyway. Oh, yeah. So
that's an awesome reference. So we would do everything. And, this guy's left hand, it rivals a lot of the, you know, really fantastic electric bass players and upright bass players that I know. While he's soloing.
That's cool, man. I still have a problem playing guitar chords and like singing on rhythm. I can play proficiently I can't sing that well, but separately, you know, but together doing that I can play a drum kit, which is, I don't know.
It's weird, man. I feel like you're using the same areas of your brain, you know, when you're, you know, being both of us are drummers, separating and having four independent limbs. But then when you break it down to fingers.
Yeah. It's different.
It's different, man. Different parts are, I think you actually are using different, like, I don't know, subsections or whatever.
The brain is a crazy thing.
It is a crazy thing. Yeah. You can quote me on that. Fitzgerald says brain, crazy thing.
That's awesome. It's crazy now. I was watching a show on the Science Channel where they're like experimenting with making artificial brains by taking organic synapses, but then like the mechanism, like combining it onto
like semiconductors, like
silicone and conductors that are man-made, and the separate cells grow together, and they've made a brain that has a 12-second short-term memory.
What?
So it's like doing processes artificially, and they hooked it up to this little motor, and it's making decisions on its own where to move it.
So it's somewhat sentient.
It's making decisions. That's
terrifying.
Like, it
awesome,
doesn't.
But
it's crazy. It's where shit's going, man.
Yeah. I don't think, I think fortunately, I mean, I've had the conversation with people in the past. I mean, you know, we've had player pianos for 150 years, probably at least. But they haven't replaced musicians. I don't think you're ever going to really be able to replace
the human
condition.
Yeah. The soul is the big thing. Maybe they'll maybe be able to generate music, but.
Right. We actually studied that in school. It's called serial music, and there's chance music. There's music where you actually build these matrices of numbers,
so,
and then
like
you have a key that goes to it. Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah.
It's very odd, but it creates. There were composers during the 50s, that really I guess you could say popularized. It never became
so they
popular,
composed
but
using like. Almost probabilities of what progression,
like a serial,
stuff?
Not so much. It was you'd like come up with a grid, and that grid would be of pitches and or pitch classes, and you'd have another grid or like another axis that would tell you
like a spreadsheet
beat duration and stuff.
Yeah,
kind of like a spreadsheet, and then you would create these compositions. Some of them would involve rolling a die, and that would tell you what you know, cube you would go, square you'd go with, and like. The music is it's pretty painful, and you can write software that'll follow that procedure and you know, essentially then create the music and play it, and it is terrible stuff.
Does it sound like jazz, or is it even more?
Not too far from like free jazz, like Ornette Coleman kind
acid
of stuff,
yeah.
Where like no context. You know, it doesn't obey anything. I mean, even really out of the box jazz, it's out of the box because there's still a box.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So
it's still in
context. Yeah, it's in context with itself, which is, you know, like some Venn diagram shit going on.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But
and I was talking about, you know, Rob Perna,
of course.
I had him, it was my last like guest, and we were talking about Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah,
he has the
weird guy.
Cool, man.
Genius guy. He takes like 1,000 pills a day. Yeah. You know, like all the supplements. He's his organs are, he has like, you know, his organs, I think, are in like the condition of like a 35-year-old or 40-year-old.
He's obsessed with.
He wants to live forever.
Mortality, and he wants to bring back his dad when we have the technology. And
yeah.
But and when he was in a senior in high school, he invented a music synthesis software.
Yeah.
That would generate. Working, and you know, it sounded like little classical little pieces, but also like he went from there and was like, this is amazing. He has like 24 US patents, and I don't know why I mentioned the computers,
the generation. I mean, I was a software engineer for a little while, you know, personal, really? Privately, you know, just for my own interest, but then for, you know, I did a little freelance stuff, and it's, you know, it's absolutely possible for you to create a piece of software that will understand, follow rules of theory and create music. But
it's just following the math, and
you just, it's purely,
it's
math
not
at that
coming
point.
From a sentient place. Like,
there's no emotion in it.
Exactly.
It's
really,
it's that component can't be faked or forced.
Yeah. And yet.
Yet. Well, let's leave that yet off the table for now. Let's see if that brain machine can cook me eggs.
We'll see where it is. It's a long time because we don't even understand how the brain works yet. So
no.
I wouldn't get scared yet.
Or what's in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. So,
coming up tomorrow on Shit We Don't Know.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah,
it could get scary real quick. But
It could.
You know, but I try not to have such a negative view. We've had the power to destroy ourselves for a little bit, and we haven't done it yet. That doesn't mean we won't.
We're kind of doing it very slowly.
Yeah, I think we're taking the long road.
Yeah.
But, music, while we still have it.
Yeah, seriously.
So you mentioned to me earlier you've been touring, or, like, pretty much the whole last year
was on
the road.
A ton, yeah. You know, for quite a bit of it, I'd be gone for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and I'd come home and I'd do, you know, a couple dates in the area. Sometimes I'd be, you know, home for a month. You know, it wouldn't be enough work for me to necessitate for me going back out.
Yeah.
But I was touring with this Irish rock band called Cian, CEANN, and their stuff was, they messaged me on MySpace back when, you know, I was basically done using MySpace. I think I hadn't logged in like a year.
Yeah, right.
And I logged in and I was like going through my inbox and there's like 3,000 messages. And I started going through them and I'm just deleting page after page. And buried amongst, you know, emails from 2-bit promoters and, and you know, DJs and their moms. And there was, this message, terrible, man, there was this message from this band and, they were like, hey, you know, we're looking for a new violinist. I think they said fiddler, but, and that was always a joke. We would always bust into like, when I started playing with them, we'd always bust into like, mama said, knock you out. Like, don't call it a fiddle. Yeah. That kind of shit.
Nice.
Yeah, so I contacted them.
Violinist humor.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, let me fix my glasses. That's awful.
That's awesome.
So
is this like Flogging Molly-esque?
No,
type,
which
or?
Was, and that's what I thought it was going to be. I was like, it's either going to be like traditional music or it's going to be, like Dropkick
like
Murphys kind of stuff.
Type
yeah.
Irish music. Yeah.
But, it wasn't, they were, it was really, really witty stuff, smart stuff. And it was, very Bare Naked Ladies. They were described as like an Irish Bare Naked Ladies.
Right.
And they had had really strong national support. I mean, they had been like the play of the day on NPR, I think a couple times or whatever. I mean, they had a lot of really cool credits.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd done a lot of festivals and they were, you know, very clearly, like if you charted it out, it was just like a constant climb up.
Yeah.
And so I reached out to them and I was like, I don't know if you guys are still looking, but you sent me this like 8 months ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we didn't find anybody permanent yet. You want to come out and do a date with us? So they had one that was nearby me in Harrisburg. So I came out to Harrisburg and, played with them that night and I had a blast. And then I played with them. They were like, hey, you know, we're doing this, thing. It was right around St. Patty's Day.
Yeah.
And they were like, you want to come out and do that? I think I was doing the Preston and Steve show that morning. And I did that, and I think I drove up to Allentown after that, and I played this show at this place, The Main Gate.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they were like, this is great. You know, we'll, we're going down to Virginia. Yeah. You know, we know that you're pretty booked up, but, when your schedule opens up, you know, let us know. So I wasn't too booked up, I think past May at that point. And, they started filling in my calendar with dates and I went on the road with them and, did a bunch of festivals. We played these, these crazy bars, man, like yeah. with these people that were just so hardcore. The festivals were like the most insane because yeah. we're playing, you know, primarily Celtic festivals and stuff. Right. And there's like, it's a very niche market and it's yeah. really cool. I mean, yeah. like the people that are into it, like love it and absolutely love it. Like live for it, die for it.
Yeah.
And
you were saying they knew the words to
songs. And I fortunately came in with this band when they had put in the majority of the deuce. So like I had, I didn't have to sleep in the van. We all had our own rooms mm-hmm. in the hotels. That's we weren't nice. Staying in Motel Sixes. You know what I mean? Plus. Like it was really cool. And they
it's
took
nice to
care
jump in that. Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, if there's a place to jump in, like, mm-hmm. you know, that's it.
Yeah.
And, they took care of all my expenses. I mean, like it was great. There was never anything asked of me other than, you know, provide my talent.
Yeah. Which is great. Yeah.
So it was perfect. And, it actually changed the way I thought about a lot of different things. But, so I went out with them. We did a ton of festivals and then, we had some downtime. We played, very few dates. We went on the road, we were on the road for like 5 months or so. And then in October we traveled to Ireland and we did, we toured the whole southern
oh,
half
awesome.
Of the country.
What was that like?
But, beautiful, number one. The people were awesome. We did get into some scuffles with the Scottish that were vacationing.
Really?
We have a couple songs that were like, you know, would make fun of the Scottish. And I mean, like the coolest thing, the banter was actually like, you know, you could say like, you know, come for the music, stay for the banter, because the banter between the lead singer and the other vocalist, Jeff, was like the lead singer, Patrick, and Jeff was hilarious. I mean, yeah. they would talk for like 5 or 6 minutes in between songs. There'd be like a lot of, well, like, and so, and just BSing with each other yeah. and calling people out. We would do a song called The Old Done Cow. And when it would come around, everybody would have to shout McIntyre. You know, everybody shouted McIntyre and then yeah. we would stop and the music would stop and everybody would shout McIntyre. And if anyone didn't scream it, he would point them out individually and, and wait until they sang. He was like, you there. It didn't matter if you were 90 years old or five, like he would single you out and like belittle you. And
yeah, that's
he was
awesome.
The greatest quality about him was that he could make you, he could absolutely tear you apart and you'd love him for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, this
that's
guy is being
performer.
Such a dick, but I love this guy.
That's a good comedian right there too.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
And I mean, you know, it was ribbing, you know, it was all good natured and everything, but yeah. it was great.
Yeah.
And, so there was that kind of stuff going on in
that's
every
good.
Show.
That
and
gets the people involved.
Yeah.
Too.
And we'd went over these crowds of people that had never seen us in Ireland. I think there were only like a handful of people that had ever seen us. Cause they'd toured like 2 years prior
it's
to
funny
that.
How that works. Yeah.
Yeah. But the people were great. The food was great. I drank entirely too much of everything.
As one does there.
Wow, yeah. And I mean, I didn't even think, I mean, I drank a lot when I was on the road with this band.
Yeah.
I drank far more than I usually ever drink.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, the thing that
it's
was crazy.
It's kind of a different reality,
we had like a
isn't
beer tech.
It?
No joke, we had a beer tech.
Making
you'd
runs
turn around,
and stuff.
Yeah, you turn around and your half empty beer would suddenly be filled. Or worse for me, because I drink whiskey,
yeah,
there'd be another glass of whiskey. I'd be like, oh no,
yeah.
how much have I had?
Yeah.
And I have no
it's
idea.
There, so yeah. you're going to keep drinking.
Thank God, you know, most of the time we'd only play one set and then we'd, you know, on to the next town
yeah.
or whatever. But
I'm getting to the age where I'm starting to slow down with that.
Yeah. yeah
out of necessity and...
Yeah. You also, it's also proven that the older you get, the worse your hangovers
are. Oh, I feel it, dude. I feel it.
Yeah.
And
but,
I feel like an old man, but go ahead.
That's a terrible place to be.
At 27, yes, it is.
Yeah. But, I mean, if I would describe Pat, he was kind of like Will Ferrell in the way that, his approach to comedy and everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, playing with them was great. And we went on the road and we took some downtime after Ireland. We only did a couple gigs and then we did,
where are they
nights.
Based here?
They're based out of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
They had a really big following in Virginia. So we went down, we played Virginia Beach for New Year's Eve and then New Year's Day. And, that was pretty much it. We, you know, wanted to take some more time off. We were during that downtime, we were making a record. I was producing the record and engineering it. So we cut most of the tracks, like when we would come back through either to like drop me off, we'd, you know, spend a day or two in the studio and then they'd go, you know, back on the road and I'd do some dates locally or I'd leave with them. Mm-hmm. And, so we chipped away at it and the record was done and, for sale, I think by November. So we started selling that and, was doing really well. We had a big PR campaign lined up, tons of shows. And we came through, we did a couple dates in the area. We played Philly on a Thursday night, and I was asked to go up and play, do these gigs with Pat as a duo.
Right.
In Vermont. And I had an offer to do another gig locally, and I hadn't yet taken it, but I was like, you know, going up to Vermont and everything, it would be nice to have like that one day for me to work on. I was trying to finish my own record at the time.
Yeah.
So I turned it down. I was like, no, have fun up there, man. I'll see you when you come back through. Cause they were going to get me in a week to go back on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And, so he goes up there and he did the two nights and he was coming home, driving back from Vermont and, got in a car accident and died. And that was in like the end of February. And, so we had this, you know, huge campaign lined up. We had a full tour. We were booked for tons of festivals.
Ramping up.
Like it was going to be this huge thing. And it was like, this was going to be the year. You know what I mean? Like everybody says that every year, like this is my year, but like it was,
things
you know,
I've been in
enough. I've been in enough situations to know that like things were where they needed to be. And, so that was just all gone just like that.
Yeah.
And, a lot of the places that I was, you know, playing locally and, you know, semi-regionally, all kind of like, everybody heard about it immediately and, you know, nothing but calls and emails and stuff. So a lot of them reached out and they, you know, they filled my calendar up. Like I had, besides losing a friend and a collaborator, I lost, you know, a lot of my business.
Right.
And it sucks that the two are so intertwined, but
it
they
is
are.
What it, yeah.
It, it is what it is.
It's reality.
So I got to fill my calendar up really quickly. And, you know, that was really helpful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it really lit a fire under my ass to finish my record. So
was that this past February?
This past February, just a couple months ago.
Ooh.
And so, I mean, I spent 2-3 weeks nonstop, like no sleep, finished my album. And I mean, I've been working on it on and off for like 2 years.
Yeah.
And I actually scrapped almost the entire thing.
Really?
And I started over. And in that 3-week period, I basically did this album. And, you know, some of the stuff I'm doing a festival, Saturday that the band was booked for. It's just going to be me and the mandolin player, who's a guitarist and vocalist too. Doing a thing on Thursday that he was booked for out in York, PA.
Mm-hmm.
The festival's like 20 minutes south of York. It's in Glen Rock, PA.
Right.
And, they've been hugely supportive and I'm actually considering, I've been rehearsing with, some guys from Leaving Cash, some guys that, the drummer that I toured with Kian with. And a couple other guys. And the drummer that
project.
I toured with, Kian, played with Moby for 10 years.
Wow.
So if you look at any videos, that's him.
No shit.
Killer player. So we've been talking about putting like an Irish, like a Irish progressive rock kind of thing.
Nice.
Which is what a lot of like the new stuff is.
Yeah.
And do these festivals and go out and see these people that were so cool to us on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of was like an unfortunate end of things.
Are they are they carrying on as that band or is it kind of...
The band pretty much died with him. Cause,
is he the essence of the...
Yeah, him and Jeff, I mean, they wrote the best stuff together. If you want to cue up one of the tunes, I'm pretty sure a lot of stuff's on the Reverb Nation.
Okay.
Not something you can't recreate. He's got a brother, who's a musician as well, but they're just not the same entertainer. They're different people. They do different things. They have a different style. And, there's pretty on the inside on that site that would be the one I'd cue up. That puts the band to a T. But, it's just, you know, it's an irreplaceable chemistry.
Yeah. It's hard just to deal with. I mean, this one's pretty on the inside.
Yeah. This was the play of the day on NPR.
So, nice. How many piece band was this?
8. We had a horn section.
Trombone.
Really 2 saxes.
2 saxes. Oh,
sometimes
okay.
Saxes, 2 saxes, and a trumpet player. Your personality. You make me laugh.
to read. You're really smart, you're even smarter than me. You're pretty on the inside. You're punctual, but nice. I can't concentrate, 'cause your friend is hot and you're really not. Now half my night's shot from talking to you. And what would you do if
Sounds
I
like
was ugly as you?
His lyrics.
Yeah, the lyrics were everything in this band. My friend too. And oddly enough, the songs that were the most offensive to the women in the audience, they loved them the most.
Yeah.
And well, we have plenty of songs
when you
over,
can do
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so, awesome.
And the crossover appeal was really cool. Yeah, it was great. Great playing with those cats. And
so that might develop into another project.
Yeah, I think some of the guys that I was playing with, and I've actually talked with the mandolin player from Kian and a couple other guys about actually going out, because we did some bluegrass stuff in this band too. And getting together with some of these bluegrass guys that I played with.
Awesome.
And going over and doing some festivals in
Europe.
I love
bluegrass shit. You could probably tear it up on the fiddle.
It is a blast.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know what? I think it's one of the like most overlooked styles of music. Like a lot of people go, oh, it's bluegrass. It's like hick music. There's no technical skill there. It's like you have to be some of the most proficient players in the world bluegrass players.
There's ukulele
banjo.
Yeah. So the fingering looks crazy. It's nuts. I have on my Pandora, I have a bluegrass station. I love that music.
It's great.
It's totally different from country or, you know, redneck shit. But, and my grandmother was like a self-proclaimed hillbilly from West Virginia. So like, she always had that shit around.
It's great, man. It's not trying to be anything other than what it is.
Yeah.
And, It's a blast,
like good
man.
Melodies and harmonies and I don't know. It makes me feel good.
Exactly, man. Music should do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was thinking about, we were talking about pop music earlier. I was listening to Philly's WRTI, mm-hmm. which is a Temple station. And Temple University station.
The jazz guy at night.
Yeah.
That guy's awesome.
He's like, I wonder how old he is.
He's been on since I discovered that station. Like,
yeah.
He's awesome. And I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
It's like he sounds like he's always eating oatmeal when he's talking.
He's stuck
he
in
might
his,
be. He might be eating oatmeal.
Rolled.
I was listening and I'm trying to think the name of the DJ that was interviewing this guy, but he's from the UK. He's a rapper and jazz sax player. Soweto Kinch.
Rapper and jazz sax player.
Yeah.
And what, so his beats are like jazz, like fusion.
He just
like,
does both. He does like Brooklyn basement, like straight up
with a
roots
back
of hip hop with I think a backing band, but you know, still does like very like much like Nas's like that kind of style.
Okay,
like true Brooklyn hip hop.
That's cool.
And but he's also a jazz sax player. Has a whole separate project.
Yeah.
And he was on the air because he was coming over from Europe to do a festival, and he was talking about pop music and the condition of music today. And he was saying like he feels like too many musicians are in the business of doing what everybody else does, and the musicians today and producers and everybody think that they need to create music that this is what the people want to hear, and you know, this is what they want to hear, and this is what I'm going to make. And the job of musicians and artists should be to create content. To create what they haven't heard yet. You know what I mean? Like, how do you know
exactly
what they're going to like? Like, that's what we should be doing, you know, making the music that hasn't been heard yet. And I thought that was like the coolest shit ever. And like immediately, like, you know, wrote the guy an email and everything. I was like, that is like the most concise thing I can possibly think of.
Yeah. And that's why, I don't know. I still shake my head every time I hear an awful pop song. Like, who is listening to and buying this shit, and who is this music moving, like emotionally moving?
It's all forgettable.
It is, but there's so much money tied up in it. It's like, how is this ship still sailing?
When do we get to this point? When do we start settling?
That's Well, I think it's, you know, obviously the commercialization of everything, and the problem is when uncreative people have domain over art. it fucking takes away from the meaning, the context. And, you know, like, take, for example, a movie. If you're a screenwriter today, your first draft, you know, if that movie ends up getting made by a big studio, you know how many people have their say in changing things and just destroying the original? I think art is so much better when it's specific and personal. Like, say I would...
immediate.
Yeah, like, when you play a solo, that's... the sound of how you're feeling or what you're thinking. And, as opposed to us sitting here and thinking about what you should play and why I think it would sound good. Like,
right.
Or like from a writing standpoint, if you're an author and this is your story and you have it, like, maybe even if it's through other characters, you have your experiences in there.
Right.
But then other people change it and you should have said it like this. It takes away the whole spirit of it. And
yeah, it's way less organic.
Yeah,
it's way more synthetic brain.
But it's hard to get that story out without going through these
you gotta go through those channels, those intermediaries,
which sucks. Do you have like representation?
No, I'm actually it's been, you know, me wearing every single hat. I've got, you know, legal representation, and I've got you know, people that I go through with. I do have some agents that I work with, but
you aren't in a contract.
I'm not contractually obligated to anybody. And I like that. I like that no one owns me, because some of the guys that I play with, I'll line something up. And if they're, you know, the people that essentially own them decide that they want them on something else that night or day or whatever, however it interferes with me, they have to take that. It doesn't matter if I have a contract with them or anything. It automatically supersedes it.
30% right there.
Right. It's just like...
at this level, I mean, you know, you're making yourself a lot more money at this point. If you continue to grow and grow, and you will, would you eventually get a full-time representation?
I'm actively seeking one, actually, right now. And, you know, who I'd love to get linked up with is Mick Management, which is Michael McDonald's company, and they're very small roster. John Mayer's on that. There's only, I think, about 8 acts.
Wow.
And they've got offices, I believe, in New York, Nashville, and LA.
Okay.
And I would love to get tied up with them. I think I'm working on a new record right now that should be done by the end of the summer. And another solo record.
Nice.
And then as soon as that's done, you know, I want to basically have this record with the trio done. And you know, I'm going to bring all that, you know. I just, I'm not interested 100% in just spending all my time touring. Like, I want some management that's going to put me into
diverse,
diverse things. Yeah. Like, I want to do more session work. I want to do more stuff on the road. I want to do, you know, with other people. I want to work with people. And for me, the only reason, my biggest motivator, it's not money. It's not, you know, fame or anything like that. I mean, those are perks. Exactly. Those are perks. But for me, I want to find success so I can work with the people that I want to work with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I would kill to collaborate with so many people. And, you know, it's, I just need, you know, I need, the stage or whatever to be on, to prove myself and just to be on the radar of these people. And a management company is really the only way it gets done, because there's a lot of mediocrity out there.
Yes.
And more. And the reason they get on television and the reason they have success is because of their management.
It's
having somebody that pulls weight vouching for you.
Yep.
And that's the way the whole world works with everything.
Yeah.
It's definitely not limited to
even
to
with
entertainers.
The new delivery systems with music and content. Still, if there's a lot of bullshit that gets through, but it's sometimes good talent gets unrecognized and it falls to the wayside.
Yeah, like you're saying, I mean, you know, you could be the loudest voice in the room, but if there's a ton of voices, yeah, you get drowned out. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. It's
Hell
been
yeah,
fun.
Man.
It was like an hour and a half, I think.
My God.
But, yeah, it was good to talk to you.
Definitely.
And everyone, please, is your shit on iTunes?
It's on iTunes, the new record, Retrosonic. You can find everything at brianfitzy.com, which is BRIAN. FITZY. or phillyviolinist.com. And I've got links to everything. My Reverb Nation, the Facebook fan page, YouTube, Bandcamp, everything.
Awesome, man. Yeah. And we're going to have you back in a couple months, maybe when you finish the next project.
That'd
and,
be awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Right on, man. Thank you.
Never get noticed, what do they show for it? A pot of piss and a glove full of lotion, posing the most while they records get no spins. Then they motion for sickness, that boat full of women was photoshopped from crop pictures, fixed pixels. They was never on the block with a pistol, just pissed with an excuse, excuse me. The John Wilkes Booth living proof how I do for the 3 East movement. Are you in or just clueless? See, the truth is my glass half full, but my mug's getting fuller. So who you fooling if you full of shit, talking like you got it, but not if it's a show for it.
Life that you were given, what you do with it? What do you have to show for it? What do you have to show for it? What do you have to show for it? What kind of mark are you leaving behind? Fade away in just a short time. What do you have to show for it?
In a system that pressures the presses from showing the people the real message. They don't get it, knowledge is like rebellion. They don't tell us, fuck that, we tell them. Until then, we will only limit progress, witnessing a government that's fixing no one's problems. But they claim they working hard to solve them. How hard when I'm knowing people jobless? Got a father every day, he tired, bothered by the signs he may never retire. And at times I'm sure he wanna retry life, like this is what I do now in hindsight. You see your son elevating to the limelight, the stars align, it's looking like the time's right. Chance to ride, make sure to shine bright. It's one life, one chance to go by.
Life that you were given, what you do with it? What do you have to show for it? What do you have to show for it? What do you have to show for it? What kind of mark are you leaving behind? Fade away in just a short time. What do you have to show for it?
Show for it.